From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. You know, back when this show began about 9 years ago, it seemed like there was no way to succeed making dumb jokes about the week's news in public radio, but just 1 week after we debuted on the air, the world first heard the name Monica Lewinsky. Really, it was like a gift from heaven, a scandal featuring a powerful man stupidly engaging in both creepy and ridiculous sexual shenanigans with somebody a fraction of his age. Well, we feasted like kings, because we knew that that kind of great good fortune would never come round again. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. So let's waste no more time. The number to call is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Cheryl Parks from Pawnee City, Nebraska.
Pawnee City? Where is that exactly?
The southeast corner of Nebraska.
Southeast corner of Nebraska, so you're sort of Iowa adjacent?
Actually, we're closer to Kansas, 8 miles.
Oh, really?
20-some miles from Kansas.
Okay, so you can sneak across the border whenever you need to.
And it used to be you had to do that, too, to drink.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So did you do that a lot, in fact?
No, I was always old enough once I came down here.
All right, that's good.
I lucked out.
Good. Well, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a deputy editor at the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hello, Kiri.
Hi. So are the shops named after your town? The pawn shops? No.
Pawn shops. Oh, that's good. That's good. Actually, we're named after the Indian.
The Pawnee Indians.
Wow, okay.
Correct.
Next, say hello to a humorist and the author most recently of Norman Tuttle on the Last Frontier, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Oh, hello, Tom.
Hello. How are you doing out there?
Oh, I'm doing swell. Thank you.
Good. I think I've been through Pawnee, Nebraska.
Have you? Well,
yeah. Isn't that where that, like, that large clump of grass is? Just
we do. We have that Pawnee prairie grass. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I remembered it. You know?
And lastly, say hello to the reliable source columnist for the Washington Post, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, Roxanne.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Cheryl, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, of course, will read you three quotes from the week's news.
Hello, Carl.
Hi.
Nobody ever does that.
They never
do. They just take you for granted,
Thank
Carl.
You very much, Cheryl.
You're welcome.
Wow, that was nice. Anyway, if you can correctly identify or explain two of these quotes, that is, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
Okay.
All right, ready?
Yes.
Here's your first quote.
He was one of the cool congressmen. He was willing to chill out with us.
That was an unnamed former congressional page. He was talking to the New York Times about a man who was really interested in the page's welfare, their birthdays, how much they like to work out. Who was one of the cool congressmen?
The former Congressman Foley.
Yes, Mark Foley. Now.
Thank you.
Now, we don't want to add to all the irresponsible speculation out there, so here are just the basic facts of the scandal as we know them. Congressman Mark Foley treated the Congressional Page Program like a hungry man treats the salad bar down at the Outback Steakhouse. Hey, unlimited refills! And the Republican leadership's attitude toward this could be summed up by the phrase, "Hey, you crazy kids, get a room!" Now, to be fair, on second thought, let's not be fair, guys.
Yeah, well, it's all we're talking about in Washington.
Really?
It is impossible to have a conversation for more than 10 seconds before someone makes some sort of Foley joke.
It's the buzz. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the buzz is how do you separate the men from the boys?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Don't go there. Oh.
The midterm elections.
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
Well, see, the Republicans, they just don't know how to capitalize on this. You know, if they were smart, they would be, like, accenting the positive aspects, like that they had a 52-year-old who knew how to text message.
I'm waiting to feel dirty. It's not happening yet. We could keep going. Now let's move on with the game. All right, here's your next quote.
I will not withdraw, even if Laura and Barney are the only ones supporting me.
That was another prominent politician, as quoted in a new book. He was talking about his particular obsession, Iraq. Who is going to stick to his guns, even if only his wife and dog end up on his side?
George W.
Exactly right, President Bush. So, yes, President
Bush.
Thank
you so much. That's two down,
yes.
One to go.
So Bob Woodward, of course, has now written his third book on the Bush administration. Yeah. The title is State of Denial.
Yeah.
The subtitle is, whoa.
Some attitude out there, yeah, on the prairie. Yeah.
Unlike Woodward's prior depictions of President Bush as a stalwart commander, this book shows him as sort of a deluded optimist, while his subordinates bicker like high school students, which may be why Mark Foley wants to be in the Armed Services Committee. Was that one too many? Was that one too many?
That was just over the edge.
All right, sorry.
That was just over the edge.
Okay. No, I still don't feel bad about it. Could happen any time, though. I'm close. A favorite anecdote. There are a lot of people are talking about all the anecdotes in the book. Our favorite is this one. Right after the invasion, and this is a true story, General Jay Garner, who was in charge of post-war Iraq, comes to the White House, and he gives a briefing, and he explains to the president and the assembled advisors that he does not have the capability to complete his mission of rebuilding the country and restoring, you know, civil functions. And in reaction, President Bush asked the Garner, who was from Florida, he asked him, hey, where'd you get that accent?
And people say he doesn't ask any questions.
Exactly. All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
Damn, I really did it. I blew the first words on the moon, didn't I?
Now, that was somebody regretting how he misspoke when the whole world was listening back in 1969. According to a new analysis of his words, he got it right after all. Who was it?
Armstrong?
Yes, Neil Armstrong.
Ooh.
Very good. Every school child, of course, is taught that upon landing on the moon, the first human being on the moon back in 1969, Neil Armstrong said, quote, "That's a small step for man, a giant leap for mankind." And then every school child has then said to themselves, what the heck does that mean? Well, it turns out, thanks to a computer analysis done this week of the original NASA tapes, he really did say what he meant to say. That's a small step for a man. See? In which case, it makes sense. A small step for a man, giant leap for mankind. Further analysis showed that the next thing he said was, oh boy, I am going to be a chick magnet. Carl, how did Cheryl do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Cheryl had three correct answers, so Cheryl, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, Cheryl.
I'm looking forward to it, too. Tell me what I say, yeah.